Kim, and you're listening to Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta, here on Business Radio X, a proud member of 2012 Central Atlanta Progress. I wonder if we'll be a proud member in 2013. What do you think, Elizabeth?
I am hoping so, because I'm really excited about all the stuff we've been able to do with CAP so far.
I know. Well, we have, so World Trade Center is a new sponsor, so that was a mouthful getting all that out this morning. But I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And
we've got a great show lined up for you today.
We do, as always. We're mixing things up a little bit today, moving the news report around, because we have someone very important in the studio. Well, we have two very important people.
We really do.
But we're going to suck up to AJ a little more than Jason, I think, just because.
I think we're going to suck up to Jason later.
I think that's a good plan. That's what we do here on the show. But anyway, we have AJ Robinson here, board chair for Georgia Forward and president of Central Atlanta Progress, and Jason Swank, chief innovation officer at Payscape Advisors. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you.
Okay, you guys were really chatty before we turned the mics on. Now everybody's quiet. I don't know what happened.
Bring them out, Dana.
I know. I will. Don't worry.
Bring them out of their shell.
You have to ask questions.
Oh, is that how this works? I ask questions and you answer them. Is that it?
It's radio, right?
Talk radio. Okay, I'm there now. I've only had one cup of coffee this morning, so I'm working up to it. So we're going to start out by talking to AJ because he's a busy man and he might have to leave us mid-show, which we're okay with. You're allowed. But we want to start.
There's a lot going on right now with the planning of the upcoming Georgia Forward 2012 Forum, and we want to hear all about it. So this is the third annual.
Yeah, this is our third forum. Georgia Forward started about 3.5 years ago. And what it is a collaborative. We're trying to bring people together from across the state to talk about issues that are important to the future of the state in a way that no one has done before. This is our third forum. It's in Athens, September 12th and 13th. And we've been at Callaway Gardens a year ago, and before that we were in Macon. And it's really a two-day symposium on ways to think about Georgia differently. We're very excited. We've got a great lineup. I can go through a couple of these topics if you want me to.
Well, that was almost like my first question. How do you even narrow down what the topic should be?
It's not easy.
It's a very broad
discussion, and we intend it to be. It's a collection of thought leaders from around the state, but anyone can come, business people, nonprofits, civic organizations, politicians. This year, the title of our forum is New World, New Georgia, Revisioning Statewide Prosperity. So prosperity means different things to different people. So we're going to talk about the future of rural Georgia. We're going to talk about how Georgia cities are, what position they are, how they're leading in the Georgia economy. Healthcare is a huge business in the state, how that affects the economics of the state. We're going to talk about ending childhood hunger, which is a growing issue in our state. And because of the TSPLOS election has been on everybody's mind, we're going to talk about what's next now for transportation, a very kind of muddied picture as to where we're going to head in transportation. And then we're literally going to talk a little bit about the past, because too many times we just go forward in Georgia or in our lives without reflecting about lessons learned on some of the things that have taken place in the past. So it's a very broad kind of conversation, but by the end, we try to come up with some things we ought to be doing.
So when you're having conversations, for example, about childhood hunger, let's say, do you find that the opinions of how things should be fixed are very different from, let's say, for example, a rural area versus a city?
Well, you would think there's a lot of difference at the outset, but when you're in a room sitting around a table with people talking about ending hunger, it's pretty common. Everybody agrees that that's a good idea.
Right.
It's the methodology, it's the resources, it's the focus of trying to do not 10 things maybe, but maybe you can agree on one or two things. And
right.
one of our problems in our state and in our region and our city is that we're very fragmented.
Yeah.
We get our information different ways. People make their own assumptions about things. But when you get in a room with people and you're talking about some common objective, you'd be surprised how the opinions are really pretty similar.
Yeah.
It's just a question of how you focus.
Now, is that okay? Everybody, I think, can appreciate that childhood hunger should go away.
Right.
Nobody wants that. But when it comes to something that is muddier, like transportation, and you're talking about where funds should go, you know, should it go to the ports? Should it go to the roads in the city of Atlanta? You know, what about Savannah? What about Macon? I mean, does it get uglier when you start getting into some of those types of issues?
I wouldn't say ugly is the word.
We don't want to scare people off.
Yeah, but even in transportation, I think most people agree that there are certain things that need to be done. It's the prioritization of that. It's whether you use private capital or public capital, or whether or not is transportation seen as just traffic congestion relief, or should it be seen as economic development, which I would argue that's how we should look at everything in the way we allocate resources in transportation, but other people may not agree.
Sure.
One of the things that people do agree on in our state, because we've done surveys of this group in a wider selection, is the number one asset in the state of Georgia on people's mind. Anybody want to guess what that is?
The number one asset?
Yeah.
Jason.
If you had to.
You're the smart guy in the room.
That would be Payscape.
Oh, nicely done. Nicely done. I was going to say Business Radio X, but, you know, that's
close.
Just
that was number
We're
two.
We're all business people here, obviously.
That was number two. But number one asset in the state is the airport.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
So everybody has feels like they have some ownership of the airport. Everybody uses the airport, whether you live in Savannah, Augusta, and so forth. So
okay.
That's transportation. The investment in that airport and the ongoing investment has made it not only number one asset, one of the number one assets in the world. And we asked the question, like, why can't we think of other things like that? Why can't we agree that we ought to have the number one asset in ending childhood hunger or in public education or in healthcare delivery systems? So
right.
Why can't we think about other things in our state like everybody thinks about the airport?
Right. Well, or even the roads. I mean, the thing is,
right, even the roads.
While you have your own set of roads in your little area that you care more about than the other guy's set of roads, still, if the state on the whole has a good road system, that's only going to benefit the state as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Boy, I got smart all of a sudden.
Yeah,
I don't know what happened. Let me take another coffee break here.
Well, AJ, what are the state's main drivers of prosperity when we're talking about that?
Well, this is a business talk show, so I'm going to say that, you know, business drives everything. Business drives your tax revenues for your state. It drives your property values. It drives everything. And so we are a very business-friendly state. We have a very low tax structure. We have, people have been coming to our area for generations to do business. But we're in kind of this different period. I'll even say post-Olympic period. And I'm looking around this room here. None of you grew up in Georgia.
Right.
And the secret to Georgia has been, at least in the last 50 years, is people moving in all over the state, but primarily to the Atlanta metro area, and choosing to live here and do business here and so forth. If that kind of growth stops, of that in-migration, we got a real problem. And so, as you know, we have lots of issues in the metro area. So when you talk about prosperity, again, you could define it many different ways.
Right, quality of life versus, you know, dollars in the bank.
Exactly. So we're trying to see where we can find those common things that we can get people to agree on as to what is it? What part of quality of life? Is it water? Is it transportation? Of course, it's everything. You know, you need to worry about everything. And it affects people's lives. But
well, I know, I mean, not to jump off on a tangent, but I know, well, first of all, that's what I do. But I do know that when I moved here 20-something years ago, cost of living was really the big attraction. It was, and it still is, one of the most affordable cities to live in.
I just talked to a guy who's moving his family down from Brooklyn, and that's one of the main reasons.
Right. I mean, Elizabeth and I actually were looking at parking rates around town at one point, and I was on a road trip to Boston, and I took a photograph of their monthly parking sign and sent it back to her because it made us feel like we could really get a good deal here. It was like $300 a month to park your car in Boston. And I was like, oh, I love Atlanta so much.
Yeah, we're probably still at 100 or less.
But
even in downtown.
Right. And this was, I was right in the heart of downtown Boston, but still, you know, the point I was going to make is that the transportation has changed dramatically in the 20 years that I've been here, and the roads have gotten way more congested and the traffic has gotten significantly worse because of all the influx of people like me and Northern creeps. But anyway, and so now that is, that does take away a little bit from that quality of life.
Right.
So as much as you know, you still like the good cost of living, you don't really want to sit in your car for an hour plus every day.
That's correct. And so what's happening in our metro area, at least, we have a very slow migration into the urban campus, if I could say, probably inside 285. Now the recession we're not quite sure what that's going to do to our patterns. I think actually it's going to make it even faster because what infrastructure we have is greater inside the city and inside this, and just on the city's outskirts. So, and with the T-SPLOST defeat, a lot of that money was going in the outside the 285 area, and it's going to get bleaker. And
yeah.
So I think that's going to force things. But back to your point about being cheap and expensive, I think we still are. We're a heck of a value in comparison to primarily West Coast cities northern cities.
Yeah.
And that's been one of Atlanta's real strengths. But we got to be better than that. I think your children and your children's children are interested in different things. They aren't as wed to the automobile anymore. They don't necessarily. We grew up in an era where you could, even here in Atlanta, where you could drive just about anywhere you wanted to go in 15, 20 minutes. Can't do that anymore.
Right.
So I think this density of living and having things close to you, we've been somewhat spoiled, and I think the next generations are going to be worse.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to figure out how do you adapt to what those folks. And that's really what Georgia Forward's trying to do, is look 10, 20 years ahead of these patterns and see if we can figure out where we should be investing our money.
Now, I know you mentioned this at the outset, but who, again, are the attendees of this type of thing?
Well, it's really open to anyone that wants to pay the incredible $150 charge for 2 days. But it's really open.
Another good deal.
Yeah, it's a heck of a deal. In fact, if you're a nonprofit, I think it's even a little less. We're really open to anyone. We'd love to have young people, students. We've been on this is our second college campus we've been on in Athens. The first one was Clayton State in Macon. And old, young, nobody's ideas are bad. We're trying to create a safe place in the Georgia environment where you can have a discussion and not necessarily be looked at in a partisan way. This is all about participating in a visioning exercise. And it's amazing. We've had a broad range of people, a lot of thought leaders from around the state. And the more diversity, we think, the better.
So is that something that, like, from a corporate – I'm looking at Jason now. It's his radio, so no one can tell that. But from a corporate standpoint, is that something that you guys would think, like, we need to be a part of that and give our opinion on what should be happening in the state and where we're operating?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it all goes back to, especially in our market, there's so many regulations. So, we always want to be involved and see how we can, help out. And the more businesses that we get into Atlanta, I know that's how I grew my business as well as how Payscape's grown theirs. The better Atlanta does, the better all the small businesses do.
Right. Interesting. I would think, business people probably would be the most, obvious in terms of their desire to get involved.
Right. I mean, everybody, but you'd be surprised. I think business people obviously always want to grow the pie. They always want to, their growth is the gasoline of business. Everybody wants to grow. But it's the same with people who are foundation community, who give away money. They want to give away to what they see are priorities and how they can impact people. And then you have all the other, nonprofits and folks who are made up of business people and everything. So it's everybody, I think, when you wants to have a brighter future. And I think that's what, we're trying to craft this and create a work product that everybody could say, we're part of it and we're going to move forward on it.
I think everybody has a vision of how they could see the future of Georgia being at this point. There's so many possibilities. So if people want to get involved or attend the conference, they can go to georgiaforward.org.
Correct.
And register to attend.
Right. And we even, I think, have walk-up registration if people, but we'd love to get you in ahead of time. It's 2 weeks. We're about 2 weeks out.
And it's in Athens again on which
date? It's particularly at the Classic Center in Athens.
Okay.
And September 12th, we start about midday, and we have a reception that night sponsored by Bank America, and then we go all day the next day. And we also have some keynote speakers. One of the real exciting things about Georgia Four, we get the best and the brightest of people coming in to talk from other parts of the country. So we have some really good speakers who stimulate a lot of good thought.
So you're also interested in finding out what other areas have done successfully and learning from
their ideas. We cannot sit in a room in Georgia and think that we're going to come up with every good idea about the future. We talk about Georgia not only in the national economy and national perspective, but also an international perspective, because we live in a global world, a global village, and we're affected by what's going on, obviously, outside the state. So, yeah, we try to match those resources as best we can.
You know, one of the questions that I always have when there's a symposium like this is, what is the result? Like, what comes out of this, and what happens with all these ideas once they're put out there?
Well, we've had two big conferences. This is our third, and we've had some programs in between. What we do is we end up summarizing in a document what went on, what was the discussion, and the priorities of what the group wanted to do. And we publish all that information, and we try to share it with as many political leaders, government leaders, business leaders as we can. And we're now in our third year trying to figure out our next step actually may be to take all the material we have and try to get the state to think about a statewide visioning process that would be much more intensive and much more granular in trying to reach everyone in the state, as many people as we can, about the future. And other states have done this. We've looked at some other models. And I think if we could get everybody thinking about, as a Georgian, what we would be working on, what Georgia should be 20 years from now, I think it'd be very powerful for how we think about interacting with the rest of the state, how resources are spent, what are our goals, et cetera. So, that is part of this conference, is to try to think about what do we do with the work product,
right?
And how can we really get it out there and be impactful?
I mean, I think one of the worst things in business is to go to a bunch of meetings and run your mouth for hours and have nothing come out of it, right?
Right.
I know we all hate that as business people.
Whiteboard full of brilliant ideas,
and then you just
see them.
Right, and then you just feel like, why did I do that? Was I just entertaining myself? So as long as you know those ideas are sort of being moved forward and getting in front of the right people, and that there is a plan for that, then I think it becomes something that people do want to be a part of.
That's exactly right. As a business person, I can't agree more that you just don't want to have a lot of conversation and nothing happens. And we're very cognizant of that, and I think we particularly want to try to be as effective as we can.
Right. If I'm going to have a conversation where nothing happens, I want to have a glass of wine in my hand. You know, a bunch of my girlfriends, and I want to be talking about something more fun probably than the roads. Yeah. Just saying.
Right.
Well, then you can bring your girlfriends and your glass of wine to Georgia Ford.
There you go.
Yeah.
And we can talk about the roads.
We don't have a non-alcohol policy.
So. You don't want me in the back, like hooting and hollering, causing a scene. It could happen. It could happen, AJ. I'll try to behave, though. We should
That's
go.
Terrific.
We should go, Elizabeth, and cover it.
I would love to go, except I will be en route to Singapore.
All right, you bum. All right, maybe I'll have to do it by myself.
You should. I want to hear all about it.
Okay.
And we'll have to have you come back, AJ. I think Amir Farouki might be joining us next week also.
Great.
To talk a little bit more about Georgia Forward.
Great.
So that's awesome. And we'd love to have you guys come back on after the conference and tell us more about it.
We'd
what
love
came
to do
out.
It. And
Let's
when you
do
come
that.
Back from Singapore, Singapore works very well. That's a great model.
Yes, that's what I've heard. So I'm going to be taking notes while I'm there
you
for
should,
Atlanta.
Because I think it's the only country that outlaws chewing gum in their downtown area.
Yep.
So
Elizabeth's already been warned several times.
You can imagine trying to implement that here in Georgia.
We can't even get people to put their pants on properly. So I don't know how we're going to do anything about chewing gum. I'm just saying.
One step at a time.
I know. Baby steps. It's all good.
Well, thanks so much, AJ. This
thank
was
you.
Fantastic. We're so thrilled you were able to stop by the studio and tell us about Georgia
and
Forward.
Thank you, and thank you for being in downtown Atlanta.
It is absolutely our pleasure. We love it down here. We're having a good time.
Yep, good time. So let's talk to Jason.
I know, poor Jason's been sitting here behaving so nicely.
I know, I haven't heckled anybody.
I know, I'm kind of surprised.
And
you
I have
look
a
like
feeling
a
Jason doesn't always behave so nicely.
Not
He's
really.
A little bit of a rebel.
He does look like that, doesn't he? Thanks, AJ. Thanks. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
So, Jason, you just recently, I mean, it's been a couple of months that you've been at Payscape Advisors. Before that, you ran Solar Velocity, mm-hmm. and that company was sold to Northridge.
Northridge.
So tell us a little bit about your story, because I sure. definitely want to hear about Payscape and obviously what you guys are doing now, but I really would like to find out more about like your path and what how you've gotten here.
Sure. So I came up here to work for Arthur Anderson right after school, the paper shredding company. And so,
I was on the other side, the AC.
So I didn't like what was going on there, and that was before all the paper shredding happened. And just
Are you sure you weren't hanging around by the shredder? Just
Well, I might have shredded some stuff.
Okay, just checking.
But none of the accounting stuff.
Okay, good.
But I left them. I saw a need in the marketplace when everybody was wanting websites. So I jumped into that and just started going through the phone book, making calls. And the funny part was is I had no business experience whatsoever. And I remember my first client even asking me, they said, send me an invoice. I didn't even know what an invoice was. I had to ask someone. And it's kind of ironic that one of the products that we represent is an invoicing system.
Nice.
So
it's how it happens. It all comes back.
Kind of full circle. So, we always just, did what we said we were going to do and provide a lot of value and just really kind of looked toward the future of how to build and really make a difference in small businesses and also eventually the big businesses from like Hitachi to Lotus to LegalZoom. And then we were sold, and it was just a good turning point to, say, hey, I'm kind of a little bored after I sold. I need to get back to work and to do something. And
you did take like a long tropical holiday or something like that.
Actually, no, I love working and I love creating. After I sold, I took, I guess it was 9 months, and then, I've been with Payscape for 6 weeks. Or 7 weeks, so I still have the new car smell. So
everything's good right now. Yeah. No complaints.
Nope.
Well, Solar Velocity won a number of awards during that run at like Best Places to Work, Most Innovative Company, Company of the Year. So obviously you were doing a lot of things right. What were some of the things that you learned along that journey?
Sure.
And maybe how you're trying to apply them now in the world of Payscape.
So the biggest thing that I learned is if you hire the right people, you don't have to worry about motivating them, but you have to worry about demotivating them. And so that was kind of the environment that we created, and we really wanted to hire the best and put them in the right seat. And if someone wasn't working out, we moved them to the right place and got them with our competition. So, and then also too, it was all about, one of the best things that I saw in running the business was not making decisions based on the past performances, because the market changes, and that's why a lot of these businesses have failed. When you look at, Blockbuster, you look at, Smith Corona, that probably no one's ever heard of, but they were the number one typewriter company in the 80s. But they still are the number one typewriter company in the world. So
no one
uses them.
Oh, sad.
But it's those companies that were making decisions based on past performance. Sure.
Like kind of in a vacuum with their eyes. Exactly. Like Adria was saying, we can't talk about Georgia just in Georgia.
I mean, I think the past has to inform what you're doing to some extent, but I think you're right. You can't. You have to be looking ahead.
Yeah.
People are making that mistake all the time, every day, right now. Yep. Tons of people are sitting around their offices
making
that mistake.
Things are changing so quickly. I mean, this space particularly, you're seeing a lot of innovation going on in the way that people get and pay vendors, process payments as businesses.
Well, wait, before we jump into that, because I do want to, I need to discuss your title.
Okay.
Because, for the old folks, there used to just be like a chief executive officer,
sure.
maybe like a chief financial officer. Now there's like a chief officer of like, haircuts. Yep. So what is a chief innovation officer?
Sure. I like to say that person actually looks at the complex business problems and solves them with simple solutions. So it's basically taking kind of marketing and technology and marrying them together.
Interesting.
So a lot of businesses had a chief marketing officer.
Right.
Well, then it was everything on marketing. And then they also have a chief technology officer.
Right.
But marketing and technology people never got along very well.
Right.
And so that's kind of where I think the chief innovation officer really lives.
So it's a combination of those two things.
Well, because there's such a rich space there of what you can do when you get marketing and technology on the same side.
Oh, definitely.
If they're not like having that productive conversation, you can have some major customer service disasters or innovate products that people don't even want.
Sure.
Well, also, isn't that a little bit like what AJ was talking about, in the sense that you if you're just developing business, like if you're just making products to make products, but nobody, you don't know what the market is, you don't care what the market is, you're wasting probably a lot of time, energy, money, et cetera. I come from IT, so I know that programmers can just build cool stuff. And if there's no market for it, you're not moving anything forward.
Sure.
So what do people want in this space right now? Give us an overview of what you guys sell.
Sure.
Different buckets, and then, you know, where you're seeing growth.
Sure. We provide payment solutions and really help out with increasing cash flow. And so even running my small business for, you know, a number of years, or any small business, they always worry about cash flow. So we just give them certain solutions, allow them to get paid quicker, allow them, their customers, to get paid easier, as well as, you know, making it easy for them to manage their business. I've been calling all our clients just one by one and just introducing myself with this new role. And every one of them I called, I asked them, you know, what's your biggest challenge in growing your business? And it's always around cash flow. And they're so happy that they're using us. And, you know, one of the products that we have is Billing Orchard, that, you know, is one of the products that I'm in charge of. And it allows them to get paid quicker by automating that accounting system for them and sending out invoicing, allowing them to accept credit cards. So it makes it very easy for the customer to pay. Or there's other products that we have, like MobileScape, where it actually plugs into your iPad or your iPhone and you can swipe your card. So you think about the application for that at an event. So, you know, this gentleman was just here talking about his event. You can, go up to, the front and buy a ticket. Well, you can swipe your card. It makes it very easy to register. And we have a lot of other registration systems that just take away that paper and that management. So you kind of step back and you think about, why do people get into running a business? You know, they didn't get into just pushing papers and trying to do collections. They got into it to do that value and to help people out.
Now, here's a question. I had a retail business for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that goes through my head when you're talking about all those solutions is, like, A, they would have been great for me when I was running my business, mm-hmm. because I had a retail bookstore and I had obviously a cash register, and I took credit cards at my cash register at our point of sale system, I guess, let's say it in the new way.
Yep.
But then I also did out of store sales out in the world, where we would take sort of a mobile whatever and go do our sales. But when I hear about some of those solutions as a small business owner, you know, we had one or two, three employees, we did not have a high sales volume. We're not in business anymore, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think cost prohibitive. I think, like, well, that's great that I could take a credit card with my iPad, but if it's going to cost me too much, if I'm selling a book for $17, mm-hmm. how do I make that work?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's just the price of accepting a credit card. So the device is very cheap. I think it's, under $100. And
yeah.
So as technology keeps getting better and better, the prices keep falling and coming down and making it easier for anybody to start up a small business. I mean, there's so many free tools out there that allow you to run your business, from setting up a website to buying a domain name for $4 or $3 or whatever it is, to creating a blog, or, you know, with
sure.
social media, it allows you to just kind of reach anybody that you want and even gain any kind of data on people. I mean, at Solar Velocity, we were able to research the power. One of the instances, I can't mention the name, but it was one of the power tool companies, and we were able to tell them, through social media research, you could raise your price and actually sell more, because people, what we found is people were devaluing their product because it was so low, even though it was the best product.
Interesting.
So that's kind of,
that happens a lot. I think people feel it's like a psychological game that they lose with themselves if they don't properly assess what the market really can handle.
Yeah. Did you guys know, like, somebody just told me recently that Godiva chocolate started out in convenience stores, like, under a different brand name. It was the exact mm-hmm. same chocolate, but it was sold really cheap, and somebody said that to them basically, and they were like, oh, they just changed the packaging, mm-hmm. changed the name, and now look at them.
Oh yeah.
So same product.
So what I like about Payscape is you guys seem to do are coming to the merchant services and billing mm-hmm. and invoicing marketplace with a much more, like, consultative approach.
Exactly.
The idea of, hey, you know, we're not just trying to provide you guys with a service, but we really want to help you grow your business.
Yep.
And, like, your blog goes into a lot mm-hmm. of those areas as well with the yep. how do you better manage cash flow. What are some of the other challenges that small business owners face that you feel like you guys are helping them to overcome and really sure. drive towards growth?
Sure. Well, one of the things that I'm working on, and that's why I came to Payscape, was I had 8 different business systems that ran my business, from accounting to a CRM to a CMS to every kind of acronym out there. And so what we're doing is we're going to combine those tools into one and really give them an ultimate small business package that talks to each other, as well as partner with a number of different Atlanta firms and firms all over the U.S. to connect our systems to them. So if they like our invoicing system, they like our registration systems, they can connect into it. And so it all syncs. So then a business owner doesn't have to come in and actually look at this system and point B system and C and D, and then they get confused and all that data is all scattered. We're going to consolidate all that into one so they can log into one tool, one action, and then it runs their business. So they can get back to, you know, enjoying running a business. You know, they don't have to worry about cash flow because now they're getting paid quicker and their cash flow is going up. They don't have to worry about getting, you know, collections from their clients because we have a number of different solutions that actually automate that. So it's just, you know, that we just want to provide absorbent amount of value to our customer. And, you know, every one of our account managers out there stay with the life of the customer and are always there to help them out. And that's kind of why I went, you know, with this company. And, you know, it's just it's a fun, I don't even treat it as a job. It's a, you know, it's a great opportunity. And, you know, I sold the company, you know, I sold the, you know, Solar Velocity. And then, you know, I do this just for fun. And, you know, it's, you know, hopefully it says a lot.
You were like weighing like Tahiti or Payscape Advisors, and you chose Payscape Advisors.
That's how good it is.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
That's
maybe
awesome.
Maybe not Tahiti, but.
Well, you do have 2 small children, so they're not quite ready for Tahiti, but maybe a year or two.
They're money drainers.
Yes, that is what children are. So when you're looking, I mean, I know you want to help other businesses, but what are some of your challenges finding those customers? What are some of your marketing challenges getting out there and actually letting small businesses know who you are?
Yeah. I don't really kind of see them as challenges. I just see them as opportunities. And, you know, one of the things is just creating the mechanism to what I kind of call is moving the free line. And so I want, and that's kind of what I try to do on my blog on, you know, the jasonswank.com is just, you know, give them value of why does it benefit their business to accept credit card? Or here's a couple tips on increasing your cash flow. It's not a sales pitch. It's not, you know, I just want to give them all this value and then show them, hey, you know, if you do need any help, hey, these tools actually can help you out. So
are they finding you just by Google searching? Are they finding you through word of mouth? Are you meeting people out at networking events? Or
all kinds. So we have over 200 people. So we have a wide reach of people going in and out.
That's across the country, yeah.
Across the country. Then we also search engine marketing, social media, word of mouth, partners, previous clients. I mean, we have
things like coming on this fabulous radio show.
Of course. Of course. I mean, this is our biggest thing ever.
Right here. I knew it would be.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, talking about social media, and we were mentioning that earlier in terms of the marketing effectiveness of that strategy and making it a two-way conversation.
Yep.
What have you found to be effective in doing that?
Sure.
Why are you not tweeting this right this second,
Jason? I know. I'm bad multitasker, so
okay.
I can't do that. But I did before the show.
You can
check it out.
All right, cool.
So, I think the best thing is just having that conversation, like you said. You know, a lot of people, and I think we're talking about this on before the show, is everybody thinks I need to have this many followers and then I reach this factor of coolness, I guess they think.
Yeah.
But I rather have 10 really super fans that are really engaged in spreading the word and telling them how good we are, and or even, you know, raising up their hand and saying, hey, these are the challenges I have, so we can actually respond and have a conversation.
Right, you know, people that really want to engage.
Exactly, because I mean, if you look at someone's social media, you know, reach and their footprint, and it's all positive, it's kind of like, all right, guys, what's going on? No one's perfect. So you kind of, and then if you look at all their followers, like we were talking about, they follow you, and then they hope you follow them back and try to just gain it. Versus really engaging and trying to providing value, that's the real benefit. And so we use it for a research tool. So we'll put in certain words and then reach out to people that are having problems and just saying, hey, you know, I've been here, I've done that, you know, try this. And it's not trying to sell them anything. It's kind of, and Twitter and Facebook are probably the ones that everybody thinks is just social, but there's so many other tools out there, from your blog or, I mean, we've been social since we were created. I mean, right? So we've
just, right. The human is naturally a social creature. Yeah. We've just got now all these crazy tools to play with. And yeah, it seems like sometimes when you put technology out there, people forget the humanness of themselves. Like, oh, now it's an email, so now I don't have to really be polite because it's an email.
Yeah. I mean, I treat it like if you went to a networking event and you had a sign over your head, you know, with 160 characters and said, "Will you do business with me?" No one's going to go up to you.
Who was the guy we had? Was it Ryan that we had in here talking about the
Ryan Jenkins?
Yeah, talking about
Gen X.
Yeah, and the millennials, and he was talking about how they're actually developing a pair of glasses that you're going to be able to wear where you can actually look at somebody and see their Twitter feed over like over their head so that at least you won't be looking down at your phone anymore. Mm-hmm. And can I also just note for the record that I swear to God, I think my neck hurts from the amount of looking down I do to look at my phone. Like that is going to be a chiropractor's dream.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think everybody's addicted to their phone. I know I am.
Yeah.
It's kind of. Before I go to bed, I check it.
I mean, if I don't know where it is, I have a panic attack. And now they're going to put it in your eyeglasses. So now you will have 160 characters literally over your head all the time.
It's scary.
Very, very scary. Yeah. And it's going to say stuff like, "I just went to the bathroom."
Yeah.
Right? Or that wasn't me.
I hope not. I hope it's going to be stuff about how I can increase my cash flow.
Yep.
Get paid faster.
I know. It is interesting, though.
So that's information I can use.
In a way, I think it, in a way, in a positive way, I think, like, I've always been a little bit shy about saying what I'm good at or, you know, networking in that way, saying, "Hey, here's what I can do for you. Here's my business," or whatever it is. Which is why I actually loved a retail business, because I just built something that was cool looking and had cool products and people walked in the door and they liked it. I didn't have to say anything verbally. Yeah. But, you know, I'm in a different world now and I have to say things more. And I think getting used to saying it in 160 characters on Twitter and Facebook and things like that has actually helped me to say it out loud now, to walk up to people and say, "Hey, you know, I can do this for you. I've got this service or that business or whatever." So I guess there's some back and forth, positive social from online to off.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, and it forces you to be efficient with your words.
Yep.
That's not always good. But you're right. Sometimes it is. I guess sometimes that's a positive.
Well, it is when you talk to somebody who is not efficient with their words and you're looking at your watch.
Oh, well, that's
wishing
true.
Wishing they were just talking in 100 characters.
They're gonna, now it's going to be like a thing in school. When you raise your hand, you'll have 130 characters to get your point across and the teacher will cut you off. Like as practice.
Yeah, I wish the teacher had to speak in 160 characters. So.
Right.
They are incorporating.
Force them to be efficient.
I did read something about them incorporating Twitter and Facebook into classrooms because the kids are like texting and Twittering and Facebooking anyway.
I guess you can't avoid it.
So if the teacher uses those tools, then they're getting your attention back. It's actually kind of smart.
Well, I think, too, they can learn from the data after.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of kids, even if you go to, you know, events, they'll like say, "Hey, ask a question." Someone's not going to raise their hand in front of 10,000 people, but they'll tweet because they're hidden behind their little, you know, icon. But then, you know, the application after that is you can actually mine that data and then figure it out. So the teacher could be like, "All right, my students really getting this?"
Right.
But then, you know, they're going to, the kids are going to abuse it. They're going to do other stuff with it. So.
Well, but I mean, that's the thing. I know when my daughter was in school, of course, when I was in school, we didn't have such nonsense. We got in trouble for chewing gum. That was about as bad as it was. But, you know, when my daughter was in school, it was, they would just take their cell phones away from them. Like, you're not allowed to have it in class. If you get it out, you're in trouble kind of thing. But then they got smart because they couldn't control that. They're under the desk. They can't see what all the kids are doing all the time. So now they're saying, you know, tweet the answer to this question, you know, text the answer to this number or whatever. And so now they have their phones, but they're, instead of talking to each other, they have to use them to answer the question. So it's actually kind of smart. So it's gotten them to stop talking to each other, but they still get to play with their toy. You know,
it's cool.
It's kind of cool.
Creative.
God only knows what it's going to be like in another 10 or 15 years. No one, you know, they'll all just be sitting in separate cubbies or something and not see anyone. I don't know.
Right. I mean, the pace of innovation and change is increasing at such a rapid pace. Yeah. What do you see coming for your industry, Jason?
Just streamlining everything. You know, obviously the mobile, you know, mobile is key. You know, like the mobile wallet,
right?
You know, everything being done on your mobile device and your tablet. You know, I hardly even use my laptop anymore. I just use my iPad and my iPhone, and I just create everything on that. And if I could get rid of my Costanza wallet, you know, that would be great. Where my license, all my credit cards are all in my phone, and that's quickly coming. and the application is definitely there. It'd probably be here in the next, you know, couple of years.
Yeah.
So what really drives you about what you're doing today? I mean, obviously you said you're doing it for fun. Mm-hmm. What is the fun part of business for you?
Yeah, it's just creating something and watching it grow and then, you know, seeing what sticks to the wall and what bounces back and almost hits you, and then you learn from it. So that's the fun part.
And what about the keys to success?
Not,
I mean, I know Payscape has a pretty aggressive plan for continued growth, and they've already achieved a lot of impressive milestones. Yeah. So what about the growth factor?
Sure. Well, it's I think it's never settling. So there's always that carrot out in front of you that you're going after and not being afraid to fail. And just, you know, I actually have always looked at it of going, I want to fail, but I want to fail quick so I can create something new. And, you know, you look back at, you know, from, you know, all the great failures. I mean, I have a thing hanging up on my desk. It talks about, you know, Walt Disney was fired from his job, you know, for not being creative enough. Or Steve Jobs got, you know, kicked out of his company. And you start looking at all these great successes or great failures that brought and really changed and shaped our world. So that's kind of what we're always trying to do.
Now, I know it's going backwards a little bit, but I wonder, you know, when you were talking about kind of creating this single product, single source for small companies where they can, you know, do their invoicing and their credit cards and all in one, as opposed to having, like you mentioned, a separate CRM and a separate accounting system and all of that. How do you position that when people are so comfortable with the big brand names? Like everyone sort of, not to call out particular brand names, but I'm gonna, you know, like everybody sort of knows Salesforce.com for a CRM, and everybody sort of knows QuickBooks as a small business accounting tool.
Yep.
So how do you say to them, oh, you don't need those brand names, you need us?
Yeah. Well, you just provide the value. I mean, that's kind of how Apple came when, you know, Microsoft and all those companies started laughing at them going, there's one button, there's no keyboard.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of, you start looking at, you know, how do you provide that value to that customer? I mean, there's definitely a lot of holes in a lot of those brands that are out there.
Sure.
I mean, they're good products, but, you know, they're not the, they don't provide, I used QuickBooks, and there was a lot of time back and forth with all the reoccurring billing that I had. I mean, I had over 500 clients. And so we spent hours and hours every month going through and sending out those invoices. So it's just, those guys are the big guys, and so they're very slow moving, where we treat ourselves as agile. And we always want to be, you know, even though we're a mid-sized company, we always want to treat ourselves like a startup and a small company so we can be agile. I mean, that was the whole model of Apple, and that's why they've been so successful, is they treat themselves as a small startup.
Yeah.
The biggest startup in the world.
Yeah. As we all sit here with like Apple products in front of us.
Yeah.
So how can people reach you if they want to become a client?
Well, they should definitely check out the blog.
Yeah. So you can go to my blog at jasonswank.com, or you can actually go to billingorchard.com. We have a free trial. We want people to try our products for free, you know, and then sign up, and you'll get about 10 different tips and tricks on increasing your cash flow that we want to actually give away to you guys. And hopefully that prove, you know, how good of a vendor we can be or a partner for you. And then we can go from there.
Very
nice.
Cool.
Well, thanks, Jason.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me. This is the biggest thing I've ever done. So I appreciate it.
Wow. That's saying
come
something.
Come back anytime.
Yes, come back anytime. Bring the rest of the crew back. We'll keep you guys all locked out because that's kind of how we roll.
Inside joke.
Yeah. Sorry.
With the Payscape team.
That's right. Well, before we wrap up, we're all kind of inside out and backwards today, but we're going to hit the news headlines real quick before we wrap up the show. So what's going on, Elizabeth?
Well, Grady Hospital is back in the black after a 2011 that was laden with red ink. So that is good news. They were losing $17 million at this time last year. But they're doing a lot better this year.
That's
so surplus of $1 million right now for Atlanta's Safety Net Hospital. Also in show business, since that's your industry, Dana, there's been some funny things going on. The Walking Dead star was arrested on a DUI charge in Peachtree City.
I saw that. That's a little awkward.
And the second fire at Tyler Perry's studio.
What do you think that's about?
I don't know.
Do you think someone's setting fires?
There must be doing some crazy stuff down there where they're like
pyrotechnics or something.
Right, exactly.
Or maybe this is like a lot of smokers that are not being careful or something. That's not good.
Now, Camelot, the house known as Camelot, you know, in Tuxedo Park, just sold for $3.6 million. So sorry you missed out on that one, Dana.
I did put a bid in, but, you know, my $3.4 million was not enough.
But it sounds like, yeah, the sales are going well for high-priced homes in Atlanta this year. There's been a couple of about $6 million home sales, so it's good news.
I mean, is that just more fodder for the 1% people that are going to be complaining? Like, everybody else is still struggling, but, you know, the rich people are getting richer. I don't know. I always worry about that when we tell stories. You know, I'd rather
I don't mind as long as I'm in the rich people section.
I know, me too. Isn't that terrible? But I do feel like I prefer when we have stories where we say the whole economy is getting better. The market is, you know, condo market is coming back or whatever, as opposed to one big really fancy doodle house just sold for a ton of money. I almost cursed. Oopsie.
Fancy doodle. Good one. So speaking of Athens, and we were talking about a lot about the Georgia Forward in Athens. Athens made the list of top 10 best college towns once again. But in interesting other news, UGA drops in the party school rankings.
What do you think the correlation
is
there?
I think that's a good thing for UGA, though, because you don't want to be known as the number one party school.
No.
That's, like, not a good thing.
Jason's like, that's a good thing. I want
a
party.
That's a good thing. I went to Florida State, so that's
isn't that,
good.
Like,
there
the number one party school?
That's right. That's why I went there.
Nice. So that was, like, your Tahiti. So you don't have to do that now.
Right.
You did that all in college. I got it. So,
I don't know. Maybe we should cruise over to Athens and have a couple drinks, try and drive their party ranking back up again.
No, it is interesting because I do know an older guy that was actually a patron at our bookstore who moved to Athens because it is such a great town. You know, it's for everybody. It's just a great town to live in, I think, if you're looking for kind of that small college town sort of lifestyle. So for people like that, it's probably good that the partying is going down. And I guess for the reputation of the school to attract better students, I don't know. As a parent, I mean, I didn't want my daughter to go to the biggest party school in the country. Like, that was not appealing.
Probably not the headline you want to read right after you've signed the tuition check.
No, right. So that's a good thing, I think, for parents. I don't know. The kids are probably not so happy about that.
Right. I think the kids will be just fine.
Now, so Jason, when you were looking for a school, did you actually like peruse the college catalogs and look for the number one party school? Was that your plan?
I did.
Nice. I could sense that about you, actually. Yeah. And then you took full advantage of it while you were there.
I did.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent.
So my last just funny note was that there was a big GOP convention event in Tampa that was sponsored by Affleck, and they were trying to serve duck. They had to pull out the no duck is ever served at an Affleck-sponsored event rule.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Do you think they did that on purpose?
I think it happens.
You think it really happened for real?
Yeah.
Wow. Affleck. Sorry.
So we've been having a lot of fun here this morning on
that.
Good Morning Atlanta,
as
the
always.
Number one party radio show.
Ooh, I like that. We should use that from now on.
But I think that about wraps us up, Dana.
I think so, too. So, of course, thanks to AJ Robinson, who's already left the building. But like Elvis, AJ's left the building. But he was here to talk about Georgia Forward and, of course, Central Atlanta Progress. And also thanks to Jason Swank from Payscape Advisors for joining us. And to our sponsor, World Trade Center Atlanta. You can learn more about World Trade Center Atlanta by visiting WTCAtlanta.com. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Elizabeth Gordon. You've been listening to Business Radio X, a proud 2012 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at AtlantaDowntown.com. We'll talk to you next week.